the best lessons I ever learned is that we don't coach baseball. We coach baseball players. And that's a big difference. It's not enough to love the game. To be really an effective coach, you have to love the players who play the game. I come storming out of the dugout like a raging bull. And there must have been 100 fraternity guys sitting behind our dugout. I fell flat on my face in front of the dugout.
And they were ready.
I had grass stains all over my pants. And when I'm getting up, I hear all these fraternity guys yelling, "Safe!" And I've never been so humiliated all my life.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
We are broadcasting live from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina, and you're dialed back into our podcast and another edition of our Dugout Chatter episodes, connecting with the endless list of outstanding baseball folks inside our great game and this association. Getting to know who they are outside the white lines is the mission of these shows, and we have a terrific guest lined up for you today. But first and foremost, this is the podcast for the American Baseball Coaches Association and the over 8,000 coaches worldwide that we represent. We appreciate each of you guys listening in each week. We hope you're taking notes from the wisdom and insight coming across the airwaves each week, connecting with these coaches on their experiences inside our game, and we all get to sit back, relax, and enjoy this great information that's coming our way. Today's guest may be retired, but based on how busy he is these days, and the titles he carries next to his name, it's hard to say retirement has been easy for him. Keith Madison, legendary head coach at the University of Kentucky for over 25 years, joins our podcast, and get ready for this list of activities keeping Coach Madison busy. He's the National Baseball Director for Score International, publisher for Inside Pitch Magazine, the official magazine of the ABCA. He's a keynote speaker, and he travels the country talking at events and in front of teams. He does some radio and TV broadcasting. He has his own podcast following Kentucky baseball. And add in that he's an ABCA Hall of Famer and currently serves on our board of directors. It's unbelievable. We were just thankful we could nail him down for an hour or so and get his story out for our listeners. So inside this show, Coach Madison takes us through his career in baseball, where at one point he was the youngest head coach in Division I baseball at 25 years old in the grueling Southeastern Conference. The lessons he learned along the way that will be powerful for our listeners to take in. We get to find out all the details of what keeps Coach busy these days, along with his personal Mount Rushmore of baseball men that have impacted him along the way. Tremendous perspective from one of the true gentlemen inside our game with Keith Madison on the show. Once again, we are using these segments to help shine a positive light on the countless extraordinary baseball men that are part of the world's largest baseball coaches fraternity here at the ABCA, and this one will not disappoint. Keith Madison, former head coach at the University of Kentucky, on today's Dugout Chatter episode. Get ready, coaches. This great show is coming at you right now. Coaches, you are in for a treat today. We have got an ABCA Hall of Famer. We've got an ABCA Board of Directors. We're talking about a guy that spent 25 years as a Division I head coach at the University of Kentucky, now serves as the National Baseball Director for Score International, and also the publisher for Inside Pitch Magazine, which is the official magazine of the ABCA. This is a man that I hold near and dear to my heart. This is a special interview for me personally, but what we're going to get out of this will be so profound and so beyond what we've expected from a normal show. So there's some wisdom on the phone call today. Thank goodness, because I knew I wasn't bringing it. But we're excited to welcome in Keith Madison. Coach Madison, thanks for being on the call with us today.
Sheets, thank you so much for having me, man. It's just fun talking to you. I get energized and encouraged every time I talk to you. So thanks for letting me be a part of this.
It is our pleasure, and I'm very, again, fired up for this one. And so where we want to kind of really begin is, you know, Coach, I could give this whole story on air, but you just got to know, listeners, that Coach Madison made me late to my very first University of Kentucky baseball meeting. But for a kid that grew up in Kentucky, if I didn't spend time with him in that moment, I really would have been remiss. But more importantly, what you've been to me personally in terms of a mentor. And Coach, you do that for so many people. It's actually astounding how many folks lean on you for mentorship. And you send out a daily devotional text message each morning. That's how I know. It's usually my alarm clock when that text comes through. But talk about, you know, again, getting outside of day-to-day baseball. Now you're in this retired lifestyle, but you've still maintained your presence inside mentoring coaches. Can you talk through that a little bit?
Yeah, I can. You know, when I actually retired from coaching, I was bored out of my mind. I'd never had a weekend off, basically. And
right.
I was working in the development office at the University of Kentucky, and great people, great purpose. But I knew there was something missing, and people started asking me to speak to their teams and encourage their teams and things like that. And during that process, I started spending time with coaches one-on-one. It was like I just gravitated to that, and it was an incredible blessing. And I felt like, you've heard me tell this story before. Most of the listeners have it, but I felt like God called me out of coaching so that I could coach other coaches, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
And so I didn't plan to do that. I was talking on the phone one morning, that year after I got out of coaching, and my wife, we have offices in our house, and she was in her office next door, and she came in and she said, I heard you talking to that coach, and it didn't, she said, it was amazing to me. She said, I think you ought to do more of that. And I'm not saying that to pat myself on the back. It's just that sometimes I feel like God gives you a gift and a skill, and it's all about Him. It's about His gift to you, and it's not about anything I do, but it's just being used in the right way. So that it's been awesome for me, and it's been so much fun for me to connect with guys like you when you were coaching, and even now in your role with the ABCA and other coaches. And it's like I have a different kind of connection with each one, and some coaches I spend more time with than others, but it's been awesome, and it's been a blessing. So I appreciate that.
Sure. Powerful stuff. It's really great. And this is the really cool part. You referenced this. You're staying active. I mean, you're traveling the country, doing some speaking engagements, doing a number of first pitch dinners. And I've been very fortunate to hear you speak at a few of those, and I could probably give your speech, you know, back to you, because I've heard, but the ABCs of life is a powerful talk that you give. But I really want you to really dive into this. And this is a quote that you sent that you really felt was heavy on your heart, was, if you're not believing in someone, you're not really coaching. Can you dive into that for us?
Yeah, I can. I think once I got out of coaching and I started reflecting on my career in baseball, it was, first of all about a gift that God gave to me to be able to play the game. He allowed me to have a certain amount of athletic skills so that I could pursue that. I certainly didn't have as much as Roger Clemens or, you know, people like that, but it got me into the game. But it was also the people that He placed in my path that believed in me. My little league coach, who just passed away about 3 weeks ago, I didn't get a hit my first year in little league, but he stuck with me. He believed in me. He encouraged me. He challenged me. He demanded excellence from me. And then my high school coach, my little league coach, by the way, his name was David Webb. And then my high school coach, Coach Van Meter, was a very quiet, solid leader. And he knew how to challenge me, and he believed in me. My high school English teacher, she didn't let me slack academically. She spent some time with me one-on-one challenging me. and she believed in me. And then later on in my career in the minor leagues, a former major league catcher by the name of Bob Oldus, I was, to be honest with you, I was overwhelmed that I felt like I didn't belong. I was a country boy from Kentucky. All of a sudden, I'm in spring training with guys that are 6'5", 220 pounds, that threw harder than me, and all those kinds of things. And so I would just kind of, I had it sort of on cruise control, and I wasn't demanding the best for myself. And Bob Oldus challenged me in a way that really scared me into competing. And I went from a short season A club to triple A in 1 year because he believed in me. A little bit later on in the Reds organization, another former major league catcher by the name of Russ Nixon, man, that guy believed in me. And now I will say this, there were a lot of people along the way from my high school career all the way through my minor league career and into coaching that didn't believe in me, but I gravitated to the people that believed in me. Mm-hmm. Because that's what I needed in my life. And so, stay away from the people that are negative, gravitate to the people that believe in you and want you to be successful.
And I'm going to stay on this and lean in a little harder, Coach, because I love the talk that you give and a statement that you make of, for coaches, how often do we sit there and really believe or even pray for our players? And it's the same idea, obviously for the players to believe and pray for their coaches. Could you talk through that a little bit as well?
Absolutely. It kind of goes back to what we were talking about previously about somebody believing me. You should find someone every day to believe in, and be that someone for someone else. Mm-hmm. And one way to do that is to actually, pray for your players. I never, in my mind, I never became a complete coach until I started believing in my players, started praying for them. And when I do talk to, when I speak at banquets and there's players in the crowd, parents, grandparents, and coaches, I challenge them, hey, coaches, you want to be an effective coach? Then you pray for your players, because that allows you to see them in a way that God sees them, not just in a way that you might see them just as a coach-player relationship. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing I think that is needed, because especially when I speak at high school banquets and also when I speak at coaching clinics, there's a lot of people that have a lot of stress over the coach-parent relationships.
Sure.
Parents sometimes get too involved. Coaches sometimes don't know how to handle that, or they refuse to handle it. To be honest with you, and you know this, I think players are a little embarrassed by it.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my challenges when I speak to those groups where there's grandparents, parents, coaches, and players, is I challenge the parents of their players to not only pray for their sons, but to pray for their sons' teammates and to pray for their sons' coaches. And that allows them to see the coach differently.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we get that dynamic going of, hey, we're all on the same team, we got to believe in each other, it's not going to work if we don't. And if we start praying for each other, we develop this, it's a type of empathy or understanding for the other person that we've never had before. And I think that's really special.
Again, powerful. It really is. Very transcendent. Now, this is, we're going to start unpacking. And really, again, the whole idea is really get to know you outside those white lines. And that's the beauty of where this conversation's going. But I tell you what, you probably had some days through the 80s and 90s that you were like, man, this is, I'm working really hard. But since you retired, you've taken on so many elements. You might be working as hard as you did as a coach. But you're, again, and I love, I can't wait for you to go into this, your time there as being one of the youngest Division I coaches there at the University of Kentucky, the time that you've spent an investment with SCORE International, and obviously what you're doing with Inside Pitch. If you could, for our listeners, Coach, talk through your career path in baseball and what's keeping you busy today.
Well, yeah, man, it's fun to talk about those things, because when you look in the rearview mirror, sometimes you can see things a lot more clearly than you
absolutely
can when you try to look into the future and not knowing what's in store for you in the future. But, you know, I mentioned, you know, playing for a great little league coach, and then I played at a small in Kentucky, you know, we call them small county schools. There was only one school in the entire county. The biggest town in my county had 800 people in it. So I'm from a really small rural area in Kentucky. I had never met a college coach until after I graduated from high school. I'd never been to a camp. I don't think a college coach had ever seen me play. And then I started playing Legion ball, which was huge back in the 60s, for the Bowling Green, Kentucky American Legion team. Had a good coach there too, by the name of Mike Cobb. And he saw something in me, and he called the coach at Murray State University at that time, Johnny Reagan. He's a legendary coach, from that era. And so he was supposed to watch me pitch on a Saturday night. This is right after the draft. And my Legion coach brought me in to pitch 3 innings of relief on Friday night before that. And interestingly enough, it was the best pitching performance I'd ever had in my life. I struck out 9 guys in a row in extra innings. And I was so disappointed after the game. I was excited that we won, but I was disappointed because I knew I wasn't going to get to pitch for Coach Reagan the next night. And my Legion coach said, "Hey, I know you're disappointed because Coach Reagan was supposed to watch you pitch. We really needed this game. I brought you in. But hey, there's 2 guys over there that want to meet you." And there were 2 pro scouts. And not only had I never met a college coach, I had never even seen a pro scout. So they gave me the information cards. To make a long story a little bit longer, one of the guys was a scout for the Expos. He ends up in my house the next week. And I signed after the draft with the Montreal Expos as a 17-year-old country boy, as raw and green as they come. And it was kind of late, so they let me go a full year of college. They paid for my education. And the next year, I start playing for the Montreal Expos in the minor leagues. And so that was a big, big deal for me. As a 19-year-old, I'm in AAA, have an injury. The Cincinnati Reds pick me up. I kind of start from the bottom and fight my way back to AAA, have a serious knee injury, and I'm out of baseball. Mm-hmm. So now I'm thinking, okay, what do? I know more about baseball than anything else. I'm 22 years old. I'm already a has-been. So I started thinking, I want to stay in the game. So I was able to get a coaching job. I was an assistant basketball coach, assistant baseball coach at Lake Wales High School in Lake Wales, Florida. And the head coach was a guy named Joe Mangaskill, who had played for Ron Polk at Georgia Southern and he'd also played for a legendary junior college coach in Florida. So I learned a lot about coaching from him, learned a lot about baseball from him, even though I'd been in the minor leagues. As you know, it's a whole different game when you start coaching high school baseball.
Absolutely.
So learned a lot about coaching. And the next year, he moves on, and I become the head baseball coach at Lake Wales High School. He had introduced me to Ron Polk, and I met Ron Polk at an ABCA convention, the first one I ever attended. Slept in a room on the floor with 6 other high school coaches. You've heard those stories
before. Of course.
Before.
Oh, yeah.
Went there to meet Ron Polk and met him. He offered me a graduate assistant position at Mississippi State University. Big break for me. I go there. He turns the pitchers over to me completely. I become the pitching coach. And then as a 26-year-old, the Kentucky job comes open. And Coach Polk says, "Hey, have you sent your resume in to apply for the Kentucky job. I said, Coach, I'm 26 years old. He said, send it in. I'll make a phone call for you. So I did that, and I won't go into all the details because of the time factor here, but as you know, looking back again in that rearview mirror, I see it was part of God's plan, but I got the job at the University of Kentucky as a 26-year-old guy. What a lot of people don't know is at that time, it was a part-time position. I had no benefits. My wife had just, you know, she was pregnant with her first child. It was a tough time, but an incredibly exciting time for me, having grown up in Kentucky, being a Kentucky Wildcat fan and
sure
in all sports and all that. So it was an incredible journey. And so, you know, we broke the school record for wins my first year at Kentucky. And we also had some tough years along the way. I look back on my career, my 25-year career at Kentucky, Chief, and it reminds me of the stock market, because we have those peaks and valleys.
Sure.
Because in those days, the athletic directors were more patient with coaches because, first of all, they didn't invest a lot of money in the sport, and so they didn't have a lot of demands. But for us, especially for myself and John Butler at that time, who was my assistant coach, we both come from professional backgrounds. So for us, it was a lot about player development. So we would actually have rebuilding years where we would have a group of freshmen, and we took such pride into helping them to become better players. So that's how all that happened from a coaching standpoint, and that's a brief synopsis of my coaching career. And then, you know, post-coaching, I talked a little bit about all the things that are going on since then, but I went on a mission trip to the Dominican Republic the first year out of coaching. With SCO International, we're down in the Dominican Republic. And I remember being on a dirty, dusty baseball field and this is no lie, people have never been there may have trouble believing this. People that have been there understand it completely. But I'm on this dusty baseball field, and there's literally goats and chickens on the field.
That's a fact.
And I remember, if you've been there, you know, I remember thinking, this is where it's at. This is where I need to be. So since then, I've been on 30 short-term baseball/mission trips to the Dominican Republic, taking other coaches, taking players, competing down there when I take players, but when I take coaches, like the trip you went on, we put on free baseball clinics for thousands of kids, and we also distribute food and love kids in orphanages, and just, it's a blast. So if you've never been on a trip like that, get in touch with me. Go with me to the Dominican Republic in November.
It's awesome. It's an awesome trip. Well worth it, guys. It'll completely change your perspective, not just about the game, about how you're going about your day-to-day in life. But, Coach, you also, you're leaving a couple segments out, because I really want you to talk about inside pitch and how valuable of an asset that's been for the ABCA and our coaches, and obviously your work there building that brand. Can you talk about inside pitch as well?
Absolutely. During this journey with SCO International and taking coaches and athletes on trips, I just really wanted to stay connected with the amateur game. I wanted to stay connected with high school coaches, travel coaches, and college baseball coaches. And my youngest son, Tyler, is a good writer. And he and I just were brainstorming. And I came up with this idea of publishing a baseball magazine. And I knew Tyler would help me. And then I got other people involved, like Adam Revelette, Ken Jackson. It's been a blast. And so what we try to do with that magazine, our goals and our aspirations for the magazine is very similar to the goals and aspirations of the American Baseball Coaches Association, in that we want to promote quality baseball, and we want to promote character in coaching, and we just want to get the good word out that baseball is a phenomenal game, and it teaches us so many things. The competition is awesome, but also the lessons we learn in life are awesome. And so the magazine really sort of started taking off, and we felt like the content was good, the layout was good, it was well done, but we didn't think enough people were picking it up and reading it. We just didn't have a means to get our message out. So we partnered with the American Baseball Coaches Association, and at that time, Dave Tylitz and now Craig Tylitz, they would allow us to distribute the magazine free at the convention each January. And then a big break for us came when Craig Tylitz said, hey, we want to get this magazine out quarterly to all of our coaches. And the ABCA became we became the official magazine of the ABCA. So that was a really cool partnership. And I think it's a win-win. And our content has become even better since we've become the official magazine of the ABCA. And we have great contributors like Trent Mangero, Andy Pettit, Ray Tanner. Man, I can go on and on. People, Chris Burke he contributes every issue. I think the content is good. I know I'm probably a little biased there, but if you're an amateur baseball coach or baseball player, or even if you're a parent of a player, to me, it's something that you really need to have at your disposal.
Well, we just love the fact, again, you talked about sending that out quarterly. Just for listeners' sake, guys, that goes out to over 8,000 coaches every quarter. And again, we're proud to be a partner with Inside Pitch and glad they're our official magazine.
And you know, Craig Tylitz and I have talked about this fairly recently. We want it to become, instead of maybe 4 issues a year, we want it to become 6 issues a year, and then maybe 8. And then eventually we want to be a monthly publication so that the ABCA can have a stronger and even stronger voice in amateur baseball.
Absolutely. 100% on the same page with you there. You know, you're talking through this whole career, and it's so vast in terms of the interactions and the experiences, and certainly your viewpoint on the game has changed just greatly. But I'm interested in, I think for our listeners' sake, Coach, if you could, what are some of those lessons that you learned along the way that have been so impactful for you that you could literally single out still today?
Well,
that's a broad question.
It's a little bit humbling, and it, you know, when you start talking, you know, the best lessons learned are sometimes tough lessons. And so it does humble you a little bit when you think about something like that. But one of the things I learned along the way is, and one of the best lessons I ever learned is that we don't coach baseball. We coach baseball players. And that's a big difference. It's not enough to love the game. To be really an effective coach, you have to love the players who play the game. So that, if I could single out any lesson I've learned, that's probably the main one.
Which is powerful, and I'm glad you gave that to our listeners. And this is a question we added, Coach, that has some real impact to our listeners, because again, we're working through this podcast, and the mission of the ABCA is to continue to grow our coaches, change this culture, to make all coaches want to pursue information, constantly challenge what they're doing. And even as a guy that sits, you know, in the retired seat, how are you still challenging your why? How are you still developing and growing even today?
Yeah, you know, I really, and you hear coaches and other leaders say this all the time. If you're not growing, you're dying. Or if you're not moving forward, you're going backwards. You know, all those sort of analogies. But it is so true. And I'm 65 years old now. And sometimes when I go up and down the steps, I feel that. But from an energy standpoint, and from just the way I think, I don't feel 65. I still, from those perspectives, feel very young, and I still love to be challenged. One of the neat things that's happened to me this year is Nick Mangione is the new and very successful head baseball coach at the University of Kentucky. And since I spent 25 years there, I still live in the area. From the very beginning, when Nick came here, we would see each other a lot. And he invited me to start a Bible study on Tuesday mornings for he and his staff. And he has two assistant coaches and his trainer and three assistant coaches and his trainer. And we meet every Tuesday morning. And I was supposed to lead that class, but I tell you, I have learned so much from those guys. And just hearing them talk about their players, how much they really care about their players and how they pray for their players and how they really want them to be the best that they can be. And the way they challenge them, it actually challenges me, and it makes me realize that, you know, you hear a lot of older coaches, they say things, it was better back in our day. I'm telling you right now, Sheets, it's better today. Coaches have more knowledge. They have access to technology and different tools they can use to help players. And I think Nick has done a great job of sort of introducing me to that world. He's even invited me into some of their scouting reports when they're getting ready to play another team. And the way they use technology to not only teach and to train, but also to motivate and challenge their players, it's phenomenal. And I sit there and I think, wow, man, I wish I'd have had access to this when I coached. And I know you're big on this. Mm-hmm. Nick brings so much energy and compassion.
Sure.
And to the game. And it's not, you know, now that I've been around him, really easy to see why he's had so much success mm-hmm. in his first year. You know, they're in the top 10 in the rankings. They're in the top 10 RPI. And his players come on that field, and, man, they're locked in. They have fun. They pull for each other. They believe in each other. They're energized. And it all starts with leadership.
Yes, it does. It's pretty great. And it's been really neat to see him, what he's done in just 1 year. And it's great. Thank you for kind of open up the curtain a little bit for our listeners to kind of hear a little more insight into what's going on there with Coach Mangione and his staff. You know, and another question, again, looking back at your coaching career and even past that, if you could talk through some of those highs and some of those lows, and especially for the lows, how did you get through them? How did you bounce back the next day?
Wow, man.
Yeah.
That, you know, those when you talk about highs and lows, you're talking about pain, really.
Sure.
Because, you know, when you care as much as we care about our players and about the game itself, when you go through the tough times, it's very painful. And I think when I think about the lows of my career, to be honest with you, and this is being totally transparent, I probably couldn't confess this to you 15 years ago, but I can now. The lows in my career were the times that I did not reach my players. When a player would come to me after practice or maybe in my office and say, "Coach, I'm transferring to another school, or I'm not going to play anymore," or, you know, those are personal losses. I took that very personal, and those are the lows for me. And then, you know, from a competition standpoint, you know, I think about being one pitch away from the College World Series against Stanford, and losing to them, and then they go on and win the national championship, and we had a great club. I felt like if I could have done maybe just one thing a little differently, it would have made the difference in us not going to Omaha and going to Omaha. So, you know, obviously those are the lows. I have to mention this,
mm-hmm.
and I think most coaches at the college level, at one point or another, they can relate to this. I remember being snubbed by the NCAA selection committee back before it became as scientific and professional as it is now, back in the time before technology and before it was on ESPN. It was just, to be honest with you, there was an element of a good old boys. And for a basketball school like Kentucky, it was hard to break into that.
Sure.
I remember winning 41 games and not getting in the tournament. I remember finishing second in our division in the SEC, winning 39 games and not getting invited to participate in the NCAA tournament. I mean, it was horrible to have to tell my players, guys, we didn't get in. And the look that they gave me, those are the lows, the disappointments.
Sure.
But even greater than that, I think, is what I mentioned earlier, is when I didn't reach a player and he decided to leave our program and go to another program or just leave the game. Again, I took that as I took that very personal, and I didn't take it lightly.
What about the highs?
And the highs.
Yeah, the highs,
you know, man, this sounds like a cliche, but it really, really is true for me. The highs for me are the great relationships I have with so many of my former players and mm-hmm. former assistant coaches. I mean, to me, that is the absolute, the best, you know, when you have those positive relationships. So, and then, you know, I think about sweeping LSU when they were ranked number one. I think about Andy Green, one of my former players, becoming a manager for the Padres now. I think about Brandon Webb, one of my former players, winning the Cy Young Award. Those are the highs, too.
Pull back your own curtain here, and let's really dive into probably the stuff that only Sharon knows. But what are those hidden talents that Keith Madison has in his belt? But also, what are some hobbies that you do outside of all the fantastic work you're doing inside the game?
I think Sharon would tell you that I probably don't have many hidden talents because I can't even screw in a light bulb. I mean, she's the fixest person in the house. She has so many talents and skills that I don't have, but I would say probably one of them is I have a little bit of a green thumb that I inherited from my mother. I love to plant things and watch them grow, and I love to garden. This sounds kind of cheesy probably to people listening, but I am an observer of beauty. I mean, that I consider that a gift and a talent. When I do a lot of driving, when I do speaking engagements and things like that, I love just looking at God's creation and seeing the beauty that He created for us, the hills, the creeks, and all, you know, I love that. And to me, that's almost a hidden talent, just to be able to appreciate that. And I think the other thing is I love people. I just love being around people. I love the relationship that I'm able to build with people. And you know, some people have more of an ability to connect with other people, and thankfully I can do that.
Yeah, I got to ask you, you like to observe beauty. Is that why I catch you staring at me quite a bit when we're together? No? Too soon?
That's why I look past you.
touche, my friend. I love this story, Coach, because we've gotten so many guys to really go give us the glimpse in the dugout or on the bus or in the locker room. The funniest stories that have happened to you throughout your career in the game.
Wow. I have to tell you that it has to do with umpires.
Okay.
There was a year late in my coaching career that I was – really, really hard on umpires. Now, I never used profanity with umpires or anything like that, but I thought it was okay to say anything I wanted to say to umpires and just totally humiliate them as long as I didn't use profanity. And then I realized, hey, that's not who I really want to be. And God really convicted me of that. So during the off season after that year, I really prayed a lot about that. I knew that I wanted to treat umpires with more respect the following year. It's a true story. That first game of the following year after spending the off season trying to mend fences and commit to God that I'm going to treat these guys better and asking God to help me do that. We open up our season at Furman University down in South Carolina. And the very first inning of the first game of the season, there is a bad call at first base. My base runner is absolutely safe.
Mm-hmm.
He's absolutely safe. And I'm in the first base dugout. I'm watching it. I come storming out of the dugout like a raging bull. And there must have been 100 fraternity guys sitting behind our dugout, Furman University fraternity guys. When I come out of that dugout as fast as this body could move, I fell flat on my face in front of the dugout.
And they were ready.
I had grass stains. I still remember we were wearing blue tops and white pants. I had grass stains all over my pants. And when I'm getting up, I hear all these fraternity guys yelling, "Safe!" And I look at my dugout, and my players are trying, they're trying to hide their laughter. Mm-hmm. And I've never been so humiliated all my life. But the first thing I thought of is God's got a sense of humor because he answered those prayers.
Sure.
And God really does answer prayers. And so I proceeded to walk out to the umpire and say, "What'd you see?" He said, "I thought, you know, it was close, but I thought he got him." And I said, "Well, you know, from my perspective, it looked like he was safe by half a step." And I turned around and walked back to the dugout. And so it was that's one of the funniest things that happened to me as a coach. And there's a lot of other funny things that happened, but that I always think about that story when I think about funny moments in my coaching career.
Talk about humbling.
Oh, boy. And you know what? I couldn't do it at the time, but when you can laugh at yourself,
sure,
and be honest with yourself, that's when you really know yourself.
That's it. You're just dropping wisdom the whole time, Coach. We're going to keep you rocking and rolling on this one. I love this question because it's always a great nod to the men that have impacted you the most. And so we talk about your personal Mount Rushmore. Who would you place the three or four people that have impacted you the most inside this game? Who would you put on your personal Mount Rushmore?
Wow. You know, I've already talked about.
Absolutely.
I talked about my little league coach and my high school coach, and I talked about Bob Oldis and one of my minor league managers, Russ Nixon, one of my minor league managers, and those guys are awesome. What do we have? Four former presidents on Mount Rushmore?
Yeah, we do.
Are we limited?
No, by no means.
Okay. I would add Mark Johnson, former coach at Texas A&M and the chairman of our ABCA board. Mm-hmm. I would definitely add him to my Mount Rushmore. He had such an impact on me. I would put Ron Polk up there because he gave me that break at Mississippi State to let me coach the pitchers and gave me responsibility. I learned a lot from him. And then, you know, Mark Johnson, I still remember, when I was coaching at Mississippi State, I remember sitting on the bus. We were getting ready to go to Auburn or someplace. And I remember Mark Johnson getting on the bus and making a few remarks to the team. And I remember thinking, I want to be a coach like that someday.
Wow.
And so that he's definitely on that Mount Rushmore.
You know, when you look back and you mentioned, you know, sweeping LSU, and I'm sure Skip is on there. I'm sure he brought out the best in you as a coach. But are there some other coaches that when you played against, man, you relish those moments? You really love competing against them and their teams?
Oh, man. You know, when you ask that question, the first guy that pops in my head is Hal Barrett at Auburn.
That guy had
so much class and he had so much knowledge and he managed his team in such a professional way. Now, he had great talent. There's no question about that. He had Frank Thomas, Bo Jackson, Gabe Gross, Greg Olson. I mean, you can go on and on and on the great players he had. But the way he carried himself, the way he managed his team, it was always just an honor to compete against him. And I remember sitting in my dugout looking across the field and saying, man, I wish I could be more like that.
Right.
So, It was always great. And then, you know, and then when you're fortunate enough to win a game against a team that's coached by a man like that, it's very rewarding.
You've been so giving with your time and your information and, again, your wisdom. But this is, you know, again, a great question for the listeners, especially the young guys that are just starting out, again, listening to podcasts, personal growth, they're trying to figure it out. You know, they're really starting to solidify why they're doing what they're doing. So if you had a chance to sit in front of all the 23, 24, 25, 30-year-old coaches and say, hey, guys, this is the stuff you need to hear. Hold this and know it to be true. What would you offer those guys?
Oh, man, I think of some little baseball stuff that, you know, one, I'll give you an example. Never unintentionally, intentionally walk anyone. If you want to put somebody on base, put them on base. I lost a couple of games when trying to pitch around a hitter.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy leaves a a slider that's supposed to be a slider in the dirt. He leaves it hanging out over the plate and guy hits a double.
Yep.
So just go ahead and put him on, you know, things like that. And here, you know, from a more philosophical point of view, spend time with the last guy on your bench. The guy that maybe doesn't have the talent, he's not in the starting lineup. Make sure that you're a coach to every player on your team and not just the guys that get in the middle of the lineup or that are your number one starting pitcher, but coach everybody on your team. Anybody can coach an All-American or anybody can coach a first-round pick. I mean, you know, a five-year-old can coach those people, but it takes a real coach, I think, to help a player with less ability. Maybe he's not fast enough or his arm isn't strong enough, but to help them to become a better player, a better person, that's when you're a real coach. And then I think the other thing I would say is make sure that your priority's in order. I had a guy ask me one time, and I know I've shared this with you just when you and I were having coffee, but a guy asked me one time, he said, well, hey, what are your priorities? Or he said, what do you think your priorities should be? And I said, well, they should be. I should put God first and then my family and then my career. And then I listed some other things. And he said, man, you got it wrong. And I said, how can that be wrong? He said, let me tell you what I think your priorities should be. He said, your family should be first, your career second. And then he listed those other things. And I said, wait a minute, where's God? I thought God was supposed to be first. He said, when was the last time you spent 60 hours in a week just being with God, talking with God? And I said, I never have. He said, that's right, because you have a family, you have a career. He said, you need to put God first in your family. Then you need to put God first in your career, God first in all the other things you got going in your life. And that way you're spending 24/7 putting God first, and your family's going to be better for it, and your career is going to be better for it. And I thought, man, that is some really cool advice. Mm. And so that, you know, if I could give any advice to coaches, that's what it would be. Don't cheat your family, don't for your career. It's not worth it. I have a lot of friends that are coaches that have lost their wives and they've lost their families because of chasing that win, chasing that championship. And the truth of the matter is when you and I are in a nursing home someday when we're in our 90s, not many people are going to ask us how many wins we had when we coached.
That's right.
But our family members, if we've been true to them, if we love them, they're going to be there for us, and our friends are going to be there for us. So don't cheat your family and friends on chasing that elusive championship.
I will quote a great ABCA member, dear friend, Paul Blanchard, head coach at Southwest Minnesota State, that says, if you really want to win this whole coaching thing, be the coach with the most people attending your funeral.
That's good.
And that goes along with what you're saying, Coach.
I was just going to say thanks for the opportunity to share a few thoughts with you and the people listening to the podcast. It's been a blast. I've enjoyed it.
We've really enjoyed it ourselves. This is, again, going to be very well received, just the information that you've given us. And again, for coaches that are out there looking to develop and looking to grow themselves, to listen to a Hall of Famer give his thoughts. Coach, we cannot be more thankful for your time and your energy towards this podcast. You really showed up today. I challenged you to bring the energy, and you showed up for us.
Well, you always show up for me, so I would have felt like I would have cheated you if I hadn't brought a little energy.
Well, that's why you're the best. Well, Coach, thanks for being on our show. We wish you the best of luck, and we look forward to catching up with you again real soon. Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Sheets.
Another tremendous episode in the books. Always great connecting with one of our proud ABCA Hall of Famers and a member of our board of directors. Thanks again, Coach Keith Madison, for joining our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast and offering your insight. It's just an invaluable perspective from experienced coaches in our game. Love some of the introspective points Coach made about his personal growth over the years. A lesson that all of us can take away from this episode for sure. Thanks again for your time, Coach. We value and appreciate your continued contributions to the game, its coaches, and its players. Just want to keep reminding you guys, these are for you. This podcast works to connect each of us with some of the very best coaches in our game. And moving forward, we want to make sure you don't miss out on anything we release. So here's the rundown. Number one, head over to iTunes or Google Play, subscribe to our show. Click that subscribe button. It'll show up on your phone. Every time we put a brand new episode out, it's an absolute no-brainer. We hope that you're doing that. Number two, stay plugged into our website, abca.org. If you click on the education tab at the top, call us on the Clubhouse podcast link. We'll be right there waiting for you. You can scroll through all the guests and shows we put out. And number three, give us a follow on Twitter, at abca1945. We always announce the release of our show on those Tuesdays. We'll pull some of the best quotes from that show and put those out through our Twitter account at ABCA1945. Now, you're listening to podcasts, so we can assume that you're into personal growth. And if that's so, we hope by now you've checked in on our hashtag ABCA chat. Now, if you're new to hashtag ABCA chat, here's how it works. We pose questions to the group. Our coaches provide their answers and their insight. It's an hour packed with engagement, great conversations, coaches sharing their opinions and knowledge. All at the same time, we're challenging what we're doing with our own teams. It's outstanding. It's an awesome platform for anyone and everyone to check in, to learn and grow. And if you missed last night's ABCA chat and you want to see what we talked about, head over to Twitter, search hashtag ABCA chat, click on latest at the top, and you can scroll through all the responses from the coaches that were on last night's chat. Then you got to make plans to join us for our next hashtag ABCA chat on Monday, June the 12th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We hope to see you check in with us on our next chat. Again, make sure you're following us on Twitter at ABCA1945. You can find me on there as well at CoachSheets3. And you can reach me directly by email Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at ABCA.org. Shoot us a tweet or a message. It's always great to connect with our coaches, hear how these shows are positively affecting you and your development. That's exactly why they're out there, and we look forward to hearing it from each of you guys real soon. And just in case you didn't know, for only $45, you can join the world's largest baseball coaching fraternity, the American Baseball Coaches Association. If you're interested in more information, head over to our website, abca.org, and we hope to see you guys jump on board with us. And lastly, and as always, coaches, we thank you guys for listening in. Appreciate you staying dialed into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. And until next week or next show, we want you to keep growing, keep developing, keep challenging what you're doing inside this game. We wish you and your club the very best. And thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.